Everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Inside the Ropes podcast here on the main feed. My name is Kerry McIntosh, and I am not drunk at all at 12:30 in the morning, as I've been at the pub all evening, and I'm joined here by Sondra, who's been taking a series of naps to feel human. So this can only be a good podcast going ahead. Hi, Sondra.
Hi, Kenny. I mean, I feel like I'm a shattered shell of a human being. It sounds like you're a shattered shell of a human being at this point. I've been running around trying to get everything ready for Metropolis, Illinois, and like, Mr. Sonder and I just bought a car from my parents, and so, like, I've sent him to the Secretary of State to, like, sort paperwork so that it's legal to drive tomorrow morning. So there's just a lot going on. I've had some beers, too, because that motivates me to actually get things done and pack and finish costuming and all of that sort of thing. So it's a little bit crazy, but that's all right, because we are here to talk wrestling.
We are. I was out tonight having some drinks, and then, so I don't know if people in the States know this, but the liquor license in the UK is that you stop serving liquor at 10 p.m. in, like, stores.
Well, I was going to say off-premise it's at 10 p.m., but, like, bars are different.
Yeah, but when I'm leaving at, like, 11:45 and I want a little drink when I get home to do my podcast, then what am I supposed to do? So don't worry, though. I thought ahead. I went up to the woman at the bar and said, oh, can I just have a cider, please, a bottled cider? And she said, oh, we've got these, let me, because it's atrocious, so let me just call it out for being
atrocious.
What
kind is it?
Now I'm curious. Old Mout Cider.
I don't know that one.
And it's established in New Zealand. And I said, just give me what you think is the best one. And I didn't look at it until I got home. Pineapple and raspberry.
I mean, that actually sounds pretty tasty. It sounds very sweet.
I mean, if it was a pineapple and raspberry, like, cocktail, then great, but the... with the acidity of the cider, it's a whole thing.
I don't know. I enjoy a pineapple cider, but it is very sweet. I can't have too many of them. Because, like, I've had Ace pineapple cider, and then there are some in Michigan that have pineapple as well. But it's a lot. Like, it's a very sweet cider, so you have to just kind of be prepared for that.
You do. So this is going to be just a bit of a free-for-all podcast of us just talking about various things that come up in our mind. I mean, I guess, first of all, where will we start? We'll start with the Jim Cornette thing. So there was Jim Cornette did a review of Double or Nothing on his Jim Cornette experience, and Hulk is in the background squeaking his toy, by the way, so it's just going to be part of the show. Hulk?
It's one of those nights, guys. I apologize.
I just can't lock him in a room again. Like, I can't. He's too cute.
I mean, you so could, he is adorable.
Because I did it earlier on, and then he came to the pub and he was a best behaved boy. So I was like, well, he can just lie in my bed and play with his toys. So anyway, as his back leg almost hits my laptop. Jim Cornette did this podcast about Double or Nothing, and it's raised a fair bit of controversy online about some of his comments during the Battle Royal. So you hadn't listened to it, but you have gone and listened to it since. Somebody, I can't remember who it was, sorry, drunk, had asked me my take on it, but I was curious to get you to listen to it and do your take first, because sometimes maybe I don't see things that other people see. What did you think of just his overall critique of the show, and is it valid, is it not? What do you think?
I mean, it didn't surprise me. Any of the stuff he said in that podcast didn't surprise me. It was exactly what I expected from Jim Cornette. And the thing is, I like Jim Cornette. Like, I like Jim Cornette as a guy. I think he is a lovely human being. I do not agree with his views on wrestling. It's like, I was talking to a certain wrestler at, in Vegas, and he said it really well. He said, Jim Cornette is lovely. He's a wonderful person, but he needs a calendar after 1987. And that's kind of how I feel about Jim Cornette and his views on wrestling. Like, they have, like, wrestling has changed and evolved and grown, and Jim Cornette has not changed and evolved and grown with wrestling. So it's a podcast I wasn't going to listen to, except you had mentioned that you wanted to discuss it on Inside the Ropes this week. So I thought, okay, fine, like, I'll put it on in the background as I'm running around doing things. And, you know, like, it doesn't surprise me that he made some derogatory comments towards Sonny Kiss. It doesn't surprise me that he loved MJF and thought MJF was a great heel, because MJF is a great heel. And that, like, MJF feels very old school in the way that he commands a crowd. it didn't surprise me that he loved Cody versus Dustin as a match, because it was very old school and it was very like his style of professional wrestling. It doesn't surprise me that he didn't like the Young Bucks versus Lucha Brothers, because it was, you know, flippy and spots and things were happening constantly all the time in your face. Nothing surprised me about Jim Cornette's podcast, so I don't really understand why it's controversial, and I don't understand why so many people are giving it credence. It's one of those things where it's like, he is a guy who was very prominent in wrestling a long time ago, and I mean, it's not that he doesn't, or that he hasn't done things with wrestling since, but when he was very prominent, it was a long time ago, and he had very traditional views on wrestling, which is interesting because he's so politically liberal, but like in terms of wrestling, he's very conservative, he's very traditional, he's very like the way it used to be, and wrestling's just not the way it used to be anymore. And so it's one of those situations where I listen to him and I'm like, I understand where you're coming from, and I understand saying that you don't like certain things in wrestling. I understand that he's never gonna like what Joey Ryan does in the ring, he's never gonna like someone like Orange Cassidy doing, you know, like lazy kicks and having his hands in his pockets and being fucking amazing, right? Like, he's never going to enjoy that kind of stuff. And that's fine. He doesn't have to enjoy it. My issue with Jim Cornette is the way he says that this stuff is inherently bad. And the vibe that I got when I was listening to it was like, I mean, apparently some people in the crowd knew who this clown was. Well, yeah, most of the crowd knew who Orange Cassidy was, because Orange Cassidy's a big fucking star on the independent scene right now. And he's great and he's amazing and he does draw money. And he, like, I have bought tickets to shows because Orange Cassidy was going to be there. You know, like, he does actually draw, and he, like, as a wrestler, connects to me personally. So I guess I just don't like the overall demeanor of, this is terrible for wrestling, this is terrible for the business, it's never going to draw, they're trying to reach a mainstream audience and it's terrible. Like, I enjoyed Double or Nothing like crazy. All of the stuff Jim Cornette was saying that he hated in the Battle Royal was all the stuff I loved in the Battle Royal, like Michael Nakazawa using baby oil to get out of a waist lock and that kind of stuff. I live for that kind of thing. So it didn't make me angry. It's just, we have differing opinions on wrestling. I think the difference is that I'm able to say, I really enjoy a certain thing, and I might not enjoy certain other things. Like, death matches, for instance, are just not for me. They never will be. But I'm not someone who wants to say, this has no place in wrestling, this has no place in the world, because I don't think you can define art that way. And I think people should be allowed to like what they like. I don't know. What is your take?
So when I people had tweeted me about it before I listened to it. So I was like, I'm going to go in with an open mind. I know Jim, I know the way he can say things sometimes, so I'm just going to go in with an open mind. And the thing that struck me was, he was very, like, over the top with his, like, descriptions of stuff that he was talking about. But, like,
of course,
a lot of the stuff that he said I thought was very valid. You know, like, in the Battle Royal, for example, like, I loved the Battle Royal, I really enjoyed it, but it was interesting. One of the things that you said there when you were talking about it was, you know, wrestling has changed and grown, but it's not grown. It has diminished in popularity. And I think that's where he comes in. I'm not saying that's how I feel, but that's how he feels, you know, because he comes from an era where, you know, in different states, you would have 10,000 people every Monday night at an arena, but that doesn't happen anymore. So to him, he's like, well, what, you know, if we want to get back to that, you can't get back to that because of the way that entertainment's consumed now and the amount of choices that are out there. The Sunny Kiss thing is kind of various things that I hope I can make sense when I'm talking about it. I don't think his use of language was great with Sunny Kiss, but I think what he was inherently trying to say, if you read into it, was not homophobic. And it was more, if you do not know Sunny Kiss and you've never seen him before, what is the explanation for his character? And there was no real explanation for it on that show. Now, we know the explanation because we watched the YouTube videos and we, you know, I asked you when he came around, I was like, who's this guy? What's going on? Mm-hmm. But to the standard audience who just watch on TV, nobody knows who he is, why he is the way he is. So when Jim Cornette used the phrase, you know, a drag queen from the Tropicana, to me, just knowing him, I don't think he was saying that in a way to be like, I'm homophobic. I think he was saying it more to be like, well, this is all that I thought from seeing it because nobody told me anything else.
Right.
And that was kind of how he, and I think that with Joey Ryan, I'm not going to get into me like not liking what Joey Ryan does or liking what he does. He can do what he wants to do in wrestling, and that's cool, and it doesn't need to interfere with me. Where my issue comes in is that Joey Ryan is a guy who, on a regular basis, charges fans money to touch his dick. but then is very quick to say that Jim Cornette is a garbage human being. And I just think that the narrative that he's putting out there is, it's easy to do, right? Because Jim Cornette, like you say, he's an older guy, he's from the past, he's not as kind of PC in the way that he says stuff, which is totally valid. Like, I don't agree with exactly the way he worded stuff, but I understand some of the stuff that he was talking about. But for Joey Ryan, again, to just kind of harp on this, like, I am the king of morals and Jim Cornette's a garbage piece of garbage human, I don't agree with. You know, you're a guy who takes fans who like you and charge money for them to touch your dick at an event, and I don't think that's okay.
But that's like, that's his shtick, though. I mean, I don't have any problem with that. That's part of the hustle, right? Like, that's how he makes his money, and I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. I think that his issue with Jim Cornette is that Jim Cornette is so disparaging toward him. Like, Jim Cornette is actively trying to ruin Joey Ryan and say that he has no place in the business and has no place in wrestling, and I think that that is kind of unacceptable, frankly. And, like, I mean, like I said, I like Jim Cornette, but it's...
But to hit back on that, as a couple of examples, so... I don't think, and I would say this no matter who it is, I don't think that you can masquerade your whole, like, well, it's part of my shtick to sell fans, because here's what part of it will be, right? There's just no way around it. Joey Ryan's an attractive guy, right? He is. And there will be some homosexual fans who will pay money to touch his dick. And he is profiting off of that. Now, that's right. Fine if he wants to do it. That's cool. But you don't then get to be like, I'm the king of models here. And what he's saying. Now, I don't think Jim Cornette always disparages him. I think he disparages him whenever he comes up and something happens. But, like, the other thing is, like, and I don't know this, is, I'm not saying this is exactly what it is, but, like, Joey Ryan is a guy in wrestling who has now made it his shtick that every match that he has, his opponents need to touch his dick, or that's what the shtick is.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I don't think that's really fair on, if you, say you come into a wrestling organization and you're a trainee, and you don't feel comfortable touching Joey Ryan's dick, I don't know if you're able to speak up about that and say, well, yeah, I don't want to do that. You might just have to do it. And while that might not be the case all the time, probability-wise, it is probably the case at some point. So I just feel like...
I've never spoken to anyone that's had a problem with it and they've been forced to. Like, because, I mean, I know plenty of people who've worked with Joey Ryan and it's just never been an issue. I don't know if you know differently, but...
All I'm saying is, you know, most people might be fine. One or two might not be. And my whole thing is, like, so for example, like, if I don't really like what Priscilla Kelly does in the ring or Joey Ryan, I'm not going to be like, you know, they should die or whatever. But, like, I feel like sometimes what Joey Ryan does is try to jump on a Jim Cornette thing. If you actually listen to what he said, there was no point where he... In my eyes, right, because I know him, so maybe I'm a bit different, maybe it mm-hmm. comes across differently to me. I don't ever think he was attempting to be homophobic. I've had numerous conversations with Jim Cornette where he is. I remember the conversation where I came out to Jim Cornette and he put his arm around me and he said, Kenny, I love you. And no matter who you have sex with, I mean, he used a different language, but like, he was like, I don't care who you have sex with. I love you because you're a great guy. And that's the kind of guy he is. And I think what he was saying in this review, now he's saying it to stir up some stuff, granted. But like, the point he was trying to make is that there was a lot of people in that battle royal who he didn't know who they were. He didn't have any introduction to them. And I think that's a valid point to kind of say, well, here's something to think about for the future. I don't agree.
I think
with
it's a valid point to say that there was no explanation of the character. And I understand what you're saying. And I don't think Jim Cornette is like a super homophobe or anything like that, right? Like, I don't know him as well as you do. You've obviously spent a lot more time with him. But like, even in the limited interactions that I've had with him, I don't get the feeling that, you know, like he would be super anti-gay or like be mad that I'm bi or anything like that. But I think the language he used here, I understand why people are upset about it, because him saying that, you know, Sonny Kiss just got off his gig at the Tropicana or whatever, and how he doesn't have an explanation for why he is the way he is. Like, that's saying that people like Sonny Kiss, people who don't conform to gender norms, can't just exist in society without explanation. Like, Sonny Kiss doesn't owe anyone an explanation for being super flamboyant. Like,
exist. He doesn't, but I think what the point Cornette was trying to make, and I'm not even saying I fully agree with it or disagree with it, I've not thought enough in it to, but like, I think his point was trying to be, I don't know what this person is or what they, and education sometimes is the best way to introduce people, because there are going to be a lot of people in middle America who don't know what's going on. And mm-hmm. you know, a couple of vignettes could fix that. It's not a massive thing, but I just think that, like, I understood what he was trying to say, and I thought it was pretty straightforward. I'm kind of like you, like, when I listened to it, I was like, I don't really get where a lot of the controversy is here. Like, it's just Jim Cornette being Jim Cornette. And, you know, he praised a lot of stuff.
I just don't know why people were surprised by it, honestly. Like, it really just seemed like, because I've listened to Jim Cornette, I've listened to him review Chikara. He reviewed, I think, National Pro Wrestling Day, like either this year or last year. I can't remember when it was. But he reviewed a Chikara show at some point. And it, again, like, stirred up controversy online because he was, I don't know, he was like shitting on Travis Huckabee for the name Travis Huckabee and saying, like, oh, this fool. He didn't actually watch the show, which is the difference between Double or Nothing and when he was reviewing this Chikara show just by reading results. Like, he didn't actually watch the show. And, like, the funny thing to me is he would love Travis Huckabee because he's like an old school grappler, right? Like, he does a lot of mat wrestling and all that kind of stuff. So I think, like, Jim Cornette does get kind of out there in terms of just, like, turning himself up and trying to stir controversy and trying to be ostentatious about his opinions, and that's fine. Like, that's, you know, that's how he makes his living, and that's his shtick, you know? Like, Joey Ryan has people pay to touch his dick. Jim Cornette makes controversial comments on the internet. Like, fine, whatever. Do what you want to do. It's fine. But I don't understand why, like, as... It sounds so wanky, but, like, why wrestling fandom, quote unquote, listens to Jim Cornette say these things and gets so up in arms about it. Like, it's just one dude talking. Like, it's just like we're talking about wrestling and what we enjoy. Like, he's just one dude talking, but everyone seems to jump on it all the time, and that's what keeps him in business.
See, I found one of the most interesting parts about it was that I felt like I learned a little bit when I was listening to his review about the show. Not that necessarily much of my opinions changed, but, like, when he was talking about the Battle Royal and he was using, you know, sort of hyperbolic statements and whatever, I got what he was trying to say, was that if you're a new viewer, you don't know who these people are, then, you know, where's the introduction? So I got what he was saying.
Yeah, and I think it's hard for me to judge some of the comments that he made because I haven't watched the show. Have you watched the show back, like, with commentary and everything?
I watched the Cody and Dustin match and the Jericho Omega match. That's
okay, because I genuinely in the past couple of weeks have not had time to breathe. So
JR is so good in those shows. So good.
That's awesome. That's really great to hear. I'm glad. I just haven't had time to watch it. So it's hard because, like, I don't know what commentary explained what they didn't. I don't know how it was presented on television. I only can speak to a live perspective. So it's hard for me to, like, fully analyze the comments, I guess.
Do you know what I think is my biggest kind of issue with it is that, like, the idea that, like, there's a discussion to be had, right, about the characters and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And for me anyway, maybe I'm too biased, maybe I'm too close to it, I felt like it was a bit of a scapegoat mentality. Just go, Jim Cornette's a homophobe! And that's it. And that's kind of the end of the conversation. But really what I think happened was, it was a guy who is in his mid-50s who made a comment that would have been acceptable 15, 20 years ago about a gay person that's maybe not as acceptable now. And while I think his language is a little bit archaic, I don't like the idea that he is now branded by various people as just like, he's this massive homophobe, we need to get him out of wrestling, he's garbage. It's like, I don't think that's what it was. And that's not what I listened to, that's not what I heard. And, you know, look, if I was Sonny Kiss...
I mean, I think if he keeps making statements like that, and Sonny Kiss was... I think Sonny Kiss was classy in the way that he responded to it. He was like, okay, like, you're not...
And I fully understand why Sonny Kiss would be angry. Understand why... Like, I have no issue with Sonny Kiss. Sonny Kiss is the person who is able to feel what he wants about this situation more than us, because it's about him. It's, you know, it's a direct transaction between Jim Cornette saying something. You know, for me, I just didn't see it as a homophobic attack. I saw someone tweeted Dave Meltzer about it, and he said, you know, I am a member of the LGBTQIA, and I'm going to unsubscribe to your newsletter because you didn't. So basically, it was like you didn't say Jim Cornette was garbage or whatever. And you know, Meltzer on Twitter is not exactly going to be the best way to get around things, but he was trying to kind of say, well, I'm not saying everything Cornette said was right, but I'm saying I understood some of the points that he made, and I guess I'm more optimistic in thinking that I wish that we could have some sort of discourse where it wasn't just you are a homophobe, you are not. And that's,
well, that's the conversation that you and I have had about how, like, you know, people aren't black and white, or, like, you can, have different opinions on certain things, and sometimes there are really complicated discussions to be had. Do I think the language Jim Cornette used was okay? No, I don't. And especially if Sonny Kiss was offended by it, and if Sonny Kiss took it personally, then I think Jim Cornette should apologize to Sonny Kiss for those remarks. As far as I know, Jim Cornette has not. He's basically doubled down on it, right?
I don't think that when Jim Cornette did the review that it was like Sonny Kiss was like a point where he was like, I'm going after this guy. It was just like one of many things that he said.
No, it was a very flippant comment. That's the thing, is that it was taken out of like a bunch of flippant comments about a bunch of people and that kind of thing. But like the fact that Sonny Kiss responded to it and responded to the quote unquote controversy and said, you know, like, this is not okay, basically, like Sonny Kiss was not okay with the comments. I think it would be classy of Jim Cornette to apologize to Sonny Kiss and say, okay, like, my language wasn't the best. That's not what I meant. I didn't mean to attack your identity. It's just, I wanted an explanation of your character. Like, that's the sort of conversation I would like to see. And that conversation, as far as I know, has not happened. Like, I really haven't been on Twitter the past few days, so I can't say.
I think part of the reason that those conversations can't happen is because you've got Sonny Kiss, who obviously is upset about what's been said about him. Totally fair. That's valid. And then you've got Jim Cornette. They said what he said. But then you've got, like, Joey Ryan, whatever, doubling down on it, saying, Cornette's garbage, get him out of wrestling, he's a garbage human. Now, I know Cornette says stuff about Joey Ryan in a similar vein, but it's like, two wrongs don't really make a right. So
two wrongs don't make a right. It's just, the thing I would prefer is, honestly, and this is sort of just my philosophy on life, I suppose, but like, if you don't agree with what someone is saying and it's not like actively harmful, and I guess, like, I mean, some people can say that Jim Cornette's comments were actively harmful, but people keep listening to Jim Cornette, right? Like, they keep giving him power because they keep amplifying his voice and they keep boosting his signal and they keep talking about what he's talking about. And, like, all of the anger about anger about anger just kind of makes him a voice in wrestling. If you don't want to listen to him, and, like, again, I say this as someone who likes Jim Cornette a lot, so I don't want to say that he should just be, like, shunned from wrestling, but just don't talk about it. Like, don't give it the attention that that he so very clearly wants, you know? Like, I don't know, like, I wasn't even going to listen to the podcast until a bunch of people tweeted me about it, and, like, you said that you wanted to talk about it Inside the Rope, so I listened to it, and I gave it a download, but otherwise I wasn't going to, because I was like, I know I'm going to disagree with a lot of it, and the stuff I agreed with, I wasn't surprised with, because it was always, like, the, you know, the more old-school facets of the show. So I guess I don't have the energy in my life to, like, constantly be fighting people that I don't agree with. I don't want to give them the power. I don't want to, like, constantly boost their voice. And that's just the way I roll, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to be. It's like for me, I just, the idea that it's like, you know, it's very black or white, I think is problematic. You know, like, because I saw a lot, before I'd listened to it, I heard a lot of people saying, oh, Jim Cornette buried Double or Nothing. I don't think he did bury it completely. Like, he liked some stuff.
There were things he liked. Like, he had all the praise in the world for MJF, and he had all the praise in the world for Cody versus Dustin.
And he even said, I even heard him say that the Young Bucks and Lucha Brothers had a good match. Like, so,
and he doesn't like the Young Bucks, so that was, so I actually found that as I was listening to the podcast, like, I think he came across more objective than I expected him to be, but he was still very ostentatious, very Jim Cornette. Like, he would hate me comparing him to this person, but I feel like Jim Cornette and Vince Russo are more similar than either of them wants to admit, where they were popular in wrestling a long time ago, and they have to kind of keep talking about stuff and keep stirring up controversy. And if people just stop listening, then they won't have as much power over everyone.
I think that the difference is that Cornette represents, there's a lot of people in their, like, late 40s, early 50s who are maybe disenfranchised with modern wrestling. Mm-hmm. And he is a voice.
I know some of those people, for sure.
So, and at least I think he should be able to do what he wants. And I'm with you. If you don't like it, don't listen to it. But it's like, if I can't police something that I don't. But look, at the same time, I'm a gay person who didn't have a problem with it. There's gay people who did have a problem with it. That's totally valid. But I don't want that to. I don't want the offense part to speak for me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that's there's a lot of blanket stuff that goes on, and that's what troubles me a little bit. So.
Well, I mean, blanket statements in general are just not helpful. And that's my opinion. Like, as a queer person, I can claim that, right? Like, I don't like just, you know, blanket, like, someone's a homophobe or they're not. Like, I mean, maybe it's just growing up the way I did. Like, my family is full of people who would not be okay with my sexual identity. They've kind of learned to live with it if they figured it out, because that's the way it has to be. But, like, I don't know. There's just, like, there are nuanced conversations to be had with people. And I think it's more important to have discussions than to just, like, label people as, like, you are a homophobe, you are a racist, you are a terrible person for one line that they said. Like, and I think Jim Cornette has a systematic, problematic way of describing certain things in wrestling that really does kind of get under my skin a lot. Because a lot of the stuff he hates in wrestling and thinks is never going to be good for anyone, it's the stuff that, like, artistically gives me life. I love it. Like, and I'm not the kind of person that wants to analyze wrestling as, like, oh, it used to draw 10,000 people and now it draws 1,000 and what can we do? Like, I'm not the booker of wrestling shows. Like, I don't want to be that person who's in charge of figuring out what's going to draw more people. That's not my job. Like, my job is as a wrestling fan, because that's, like, what I bring to this show, is I'm a fan of something and I want to watch a show, and, like, I can tell you what I enjoy, I can tell you what I don't enjoy, I can tell you what's creatively satisfying and fulfilling. And a lot of that stuff is creatively satisfying and fulfilling for the people performing the wrestling as well. And I don't know, like, I don't think that you can quantify a lot of that stuff.
And I guess that's where the difficulty lies and where you stand on it. Like, I mean, I'm going to try and use a comparison here, which probably won't work, but I'll try. It's like if there's a big movie franchise that's really good, right? It does really well at the box office. And then, like, by the 12th movie, it's doing like 10% of what it used to. Mm-hmm. But, like, that 10% that still watch it, love it. And they, you know, they want to see Police Academy 12 or whatever. But there's a lot of Police Academy fans who go, this isn't what I signed up for. This isn't the franchise that I loved. And I think that's kind of what's happening with wrestling right now, is that there's this divide. But then with what Jim Cornette was talking about, there is stuff that is, you know, Cody and Dustin and MJF that hopefully could bring old school fans back into the product again. And, you know, there was 11 million people watching Monday Night Wrestling in 1999, and now there's two. So where have those 9 million people gone? I mean, most have gone out to do something else, but, like, is there a way to reclaim some of them?
That'll be the test. I hope so, and I think AEW has a chance to do some of that, right? Like, because WWE right now, and I know that we're going to get into talking about WWE, unfortunately, but, like, WWE has felt so formulaic for so long, and I think what AEW did was provide a lot of different stuff, right? Like, when I was watching Double or Nothing, and when I was at All In, which wasn't AEW, but it was, like, kind of the prequel to AEW, it felt like more of a variety show, and it felt like something that was more tailored to a fan like me who loves artsy shit and weird things and comedy and fun and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, that's what drives me. That's what I love. Like, that's my favorite stuff in wrestling. So the fact that I'm going to get some of that, that's awesome. I'm really happy about it. But I think it also appeals to old school fans, with Cody versus Dustin being a very old school wrestling match, brother versus brother. And their, you know, their father's name is invoked by the crowd and they're both in tears before the match even starts. Like, that's visceral. That's emotion. That's wrestling storytelling at its best. And I don't think anyone can deny that. Like, I think wrestling, when it's allowed to grow and breathe and be a variety show, is at its best, because it can bring in so many different types of audiences. And that's kind of what I hope for with AEW. And, like, coming out of Double or Nothing, I think that we have a pretty good chance. I mean, Double or Nothing did very well. So, I mean, if you want to judge it by metrics, like, it did very well in terms of buys and in terms of fan interaction and all of those things that I don't pay much attention to, but I see them come across my news feeds. And it makes me happy that it's doing well. Like, I guess I'm just always of the mindset that I want things to succeed, and I want to help them succeed when they're good. And that's just kind of where I stand on it, I guess.
And that's kind of why the bridge is so good with us sometimes, because I'm fascinated by the numbers and the kind of all that kind of stuff that goes into it, as well as the creative output that we see on TV. So it hopefully works for people when they listen. So I guess the other thing to mention before we talk about WWE is Jon Moxley also did an interview with Wade Keller, where he talked about the Brock Lesnar match at WrestleMania 32 and all the ideas that he came up with and were not able to go through. Also the Austin podcast, about how he told the producer that he did not want to bring up his childhood, and the producer kind of did it anyway. I guess just even from seeing the quotes in the interviews, do you feel like there's been a change in the perception to Dean Ambrose or Jon Moxley from these interviews that he's doing? Is it a good idea that he's done them to kind of get his point of view out there, and what do you make of the whole thing?
I like him 100 times better in the past 2 weeks than I have in ages, honestly. Like, I was never a Dean Ambrose fan, and if you listen to Inside the Ropes, you know that. Like, I was always fairly down on Dean Ambrose. I really like John Moxley. Like, as a dude, I like him. I think he seems very interesting. I think he seems very creatively motivated, and he seems like someone who wants to be involved in his own career. And I think WWE and he probably just didn't mix in a lot of ways. It was interesting, and I haven't listened to the interview, so I apologize, but like, I did read the transcript of some things, and him saying that he didn't want certain things brought up in that interview, and they brought it up anyway. I think that's a dick move on WWE's part. And on, like, I don't know if Stone Cold was told about that or not told about that or whatever. Like, he was probably just handed a script, to be honest. But like, it's a dick move to be like, hey, my childhood wasn't good, I don't want to talk about it, let's just talk about anything else. Like, you know, as an interviewer, like, when you interview subjects and they're like, I don't want to talk about this certain thing, you don't go there, right? Like, because you don't want to antagonize your interview subjects, and you don't want to, like, harm the show. And I think that going there harmed the show so much when it comes to the Stone Cold podcast. So everyone got kind of a perception of Dean Ambrose that, you know, he didn't want to play ball, and he didn't want to be open, and he didn't want to talk about stuff. John Moxley seems very interested in talking about things, and I really like that, actually. And I think it's a credit to him that he doesn't come across as super, like, he doesn't come across as super bitter in the way that CM Punk did when he started talking, right? Like, he's
going out of one thing into continuing his love of wrestling, whereas Punk walked away.
So exactly. And you can tell that he loves wrestling. And that, to me, as, again, like, a big fan of professional wrestling, like, I love wrestling so much. Like, that means a lot to me, is like, oh, you like this thing that I like, and you're part of it, and that's really cool, and I want to support you more. It just seems like he and WWE were never going to be a good mix. But even when he talks about that company, and he has plenty of bad things to say about that company and their creative process and their handling of him while he was there, he still feels like he was grateful for his time there, and that it advanced his career, and that it gave him a new platform, and that it taught him a lot. I think it's different to the Punk interviews, in the sense that Punk does seem very bitter. And maybe part of that is because he's walked away, and maybe part of that is just the way Punk is. He's very abrasive. I think Moxley can be too, but I don't know. Like, I like reading the transcripts, and like, I did listen to the full Jericho interview that he did. He comes across as a more likable dude than I expected. Like, I expected him to be a little bit more like up his own arse, or I don't know, like self-important or something. And that's not the vibe that I'm getting. And so that makes me happy. It makes me really excited to see what he's going to do. Like, I know he fought Juice Robinson for the IWGP United States title last night. And are we allowed to do New Japan spoilers on the show? We are, right? Like,
sure, why not? Why not?
Okay, like, he won the IWGP US title last night. And that's
not the version I signed.
Not the version you signed. But I think that's really interesting, right? Like, he won the title from Juice Robinson. So apparently going forward, he's going to be doing something else with New Japan. I find that very intriguing. I don't know what it's going to be. I still haven't watched the match because I haven't had time, like I said, but I really want to watch it tonight at some point. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm 100% more interested in Jon Moxley than I ever was in Dean Ambrose. And I think that's telling. Like, I don't know. What's your take on all of it?
I mean, he seems more authentic now than he did before. And that's kind of a testament, I guess, to the system that he's just left and the new place he's just gone to. He's really captured this kind of like underground underdog vibe, right? Where yeah. He's like, very cleverly, he's put out there on two big podcasts. He's chosen his spots very carefully, where he's explained his whole situation and all the stuff about Brock Lesnar, the Austin podcast, and
And I think it's really smart, because that's a lot of stuff that fans had grief with him for, right? Like, even Paul Heyman in Inside the Ropes show was talking about Dean Ambrose and how he wasn't motivated and how that match didn't go very well and all that kind of stuff. And he had kind of a rebuttal to it that I understood.
Yeah, so I feel like he's, for anyone who's going to be following AEW or anybody who's going to be following Jon Moxley going forward, I feel like he is doing everything he should be doing to get people behind him. And you know, he seems very passionate about wrestling. He seems very passionate when you hear him talk about it, when you see him in the ring, about what he wants to do. So I'm happy for the guy that he gets to do what he wants to do. I feel bad for his wife who needs to be on commentary and not want to be there, but
in a role that she's not suited to.
No, she has got progressively worse.
Like, she's blessed. Renee Young is a very talented woman. Like, she is incredibly talented, and commentary is just not her strength. And it sucks that she has to be on commentary because they want a woman on commentary. And I don't know, it's unfortunate.
But yeah, so Moxley is now, he will be facing Joey Janela at Fight for the Fallen. And then I assume it's going to be Kenny Omega All Out. And that's kind of where we are.
It's exciting. Like, I'm actually excited to watch Jon Moxley matches. Whereas any Dean Ambrose match that was advertised, I'm just not excited about ever. So I think that's kind of a testament to how he's come across in these interviews and just his presence at Double or Nothing, too. Like, he seems like he's been unleashed. It seems like he's been released from something. Released from his shackles, I suppose.
So, I mean, I know that Raw and SmackDown this week weren't exactly the most exciting episodes, but, I mean, let's talk about a couple of things in the show. So, on Raw, they had built up that Stephanie had said that, you know, Brock would have to cash in. So, he ends up arriving at Raw, he comes out and beats up Seth Rollins for 10 minutes, and then decides that he's not going to cash in until Friday at Super Showdown, and then he leaves. And for me, like, I feel like at this kind of time frame, when you, especially in the fall or the autumn, when you've got another company coming around, that this is not the best time to be known for being bait and switchy.
Well, I mean, did anyone really think that when Brock Lesnar said, I'm going to cash in tonight on Monday Night Raw, that that was absolutely 100% going to happen?
But like, they did advertise over all their platforms.
Of course they did. No, and that's stupid on their part. But like, what I'm saying is that I don't trust this company at this point to keep their promises. So it just, when he, you know, beat up Seth Rollins a bunch and was like, nah, like that seemed more on brand than it would have been for him to actually cash in, because they promise a lot of shit and they don't deliver.
I think that's the problem, right? Is that when you, because to me, it's like you can promise something and not deliver it, as long as what you deliver instead is of like an equal value.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think that what they did this week was equal value.
Like, maybe I'm a little salty because I just had to watch the Retro Raw where Vince is revealed as the higher power, which like makes less sense in context. So it's been a problem in WWE for a long time. Like, it's weird when context actually takes away from the effect of something, right? Like, that should never happen. But it's you know, it's been a systematic problem with this company for a very long time. That's, you know, like, that's an issue in storytelling. And them being like, Brock Lesnar's going to cash in. Of course he wasn't going to cash in. Like, I didn't expect him to cash in. He just found out last week that he has a whole year to cash in. So I expect it to take quite a while. I don't know how many more dates he's going to work until he cashes in. I don't want him to cash in because then he's going to be the champion, and I don't want that either. So it's just, that's the problem, is that I'm not invested in Brock Lesnar becoming champion. Like, I like him walking around with a boombox, but that can only get you so far.
That's true. I do just want to point out, for people keeping score at home, Hulk has now fallen asleep with a toy in his mouth.
Send me a picture.
I will take a picture right now of that. One of the other things in Raw that we should mention is Firefly Funhouse. Is it just me that really wants a Wyatt Jim t-shirt, like, now?
I think they're selling it.
I know, but I'm not paying 25 quid for one.
Well, I mean, that's your problem.
25 sterling pounds.
Yeah. I mean, t-shirts are not as cheap as they used to be, Kenneth. But, I mean, it is a great t-shirt, honestly.
Oh, God. Oh, Hulk's just farted. Jesus Christ.
I mean, that is your fault for letting him in your bed while you podcast.
Anyway.
But the Firefly Funhouse was fantastic this week. It actually stepped up its game, like, pun kind of intended. I loved the Firefly Funhouse this week, and I got so excited about it when I saw the YouTube clip, because, I mean, Husker's the pig, right? Husker's the pig who is eating tons of chocolate and is out of shape and is not going to go anywhere with his life. Obviously, that is a reference to Husky Harris, who was Bray Wyatt's former identity when he was in the Nexus and was not as in shape as he is now. you know? So, I mean, Bray Wyatt talking to Husker's the pig and saying, like, Huskers, you know, you need to get your act together. you know, soon people are going to say that you're brilliant. They're going to say you've got the whole world in your hands, right? And then he winks at the camera. It's so self-aware. It's so obviously intentional that it's brilliant. Like, this is the kind of stuff I love. And this is the kind of stuff that, honestly, when we talk about AEW and we talk about Double or Nothing and we talk about some of the in-jokes and some of the, like, digs at WWE and even some of the, like, internal story threads through being the elite, like with Michael Nakazawa driving Matt Jackson crazy and that kind of stuff. This is the stuff I love because you're rewarded for paying attention to the details. Like, I know the saga of Bray Wyatt probably better than most because I've been a Bray Wyatt obsessive for a very long time. But all of these clues and whatnot are, like, so cool for me to see as a fan because it's like, yeah, of course he's talking to Huskers the Pig, who's, like, his former identity as Husky Harris. And Husky Harris did, like, he had to go back down to NXT and he became, like, you know, Axel, whatever his last name was that I can't remember right now. But, like, he had to do all these different characters in NXT until he came up with Bray Wyatt and was lauded as a genius. Like, I remember writing into Inside the Ropes about how, like, before I was a part of it, about how, like, if NXT can turn out characters like Bray Wyatt, then we'll be set to go and wrestling's in good hands for the future. And little did I know how terrible things were going to be. I was still such a baby wrestling fan at that point. But I don't know. Like, I love what they're doing with Firefly Funhouse and him, like, having Vince the demon, right? Like, the demon coming in and being like, Huskers, you're, if you don't get your act together, you're. And he's like, yowie, wowie, Huskers, like, we need to exercise now. And it was a very special episode, which as a child of the 90s just speaks to me because there were very special episodes of all of our shows, right? And, like, they do the exercise video, right? Like, pull up your pants and do the muscle man dance. And it's all, like, bright and colorful and fun. And there's a one moment where he says in it, like, and erase your mind. And it gets really dark. And there's all this, like, demonic stuff around him. It's so brilliant the way they're putting together Firefly Funhouse. And I love so much. Like, I love it all. I love it all. I think it's so good. And I get just really, really excited. And the rest of Raw and SmackDown are just so bland, other than the 24/7 title. Like, that's the other highlight of the show. And why can't more of it, like, have this much creativity? And I think the reason is that Wyndham Rotunda, using his actual name, like, he understands who he is. He remembers his history. He remembers creating this character of Bray Wyatt, and he's using that to make this so interesting and great. And I love it. It's so good.
Yeah, I mean, it's the vignettes are so good that it's almost like you fear for where they're going to go when he gets there.
I don't like to think about it. I can't think about that or I will cry because I have been through Bray Wyatt heartbreak before. And so right now I'm in the relationship. I'm in the happy time. I can't think about the, you know, divorce that's coming from my soul.
I don't want to think about if he goes out and sees other women at night. I believe he's only with me.
Of course.
But these are great. These are really, like you said, they're on the nose. He takes the piss out of himself. He takes the piss out of the characters he's had in the past. It's just, it's very current and sort of on trend, which is not something WWE are known for doing at the moment. And, I mean, you can see from this that he has a lot of input into what this is.
You can tell. He's the one behind these. Like, I'm sure he has, you know, people that he's working with. But when he created Bray Wyatt in, what, 2012, I think it was? Because Bray Wyatt came about, like, in FCW before NXT even happened. And when he created that character, like, that was him. He was the driving force behind it. And I think he's always had his headcanon, and he's always known what Bray Wyatt is supposed to be. But it seemed like for like 5 years, he had lofty goals and he had all these, like, cryptic speeches and had an idea of Bray Wyatt, but never could really get there or translate it to wrestling feuds. And now it seems like he's taking all of that headcanon that he still holds very dear and he's putting it into these vignettes, which are just brilliant. And they keep stepping it up every single week. And that's why I don't want to see him in a wrestling feud anytime soon. I just want to see this continue because it keeps getting better and better and better.
I mean, I love it. I do love it.
I'm trying to cling to the only joy we can find in WWE programming right now.
No, you're totally correct to try and find it. Lacey Evans and Charlotte Flair had a fucking terrible match on Raw. So
did
there's
they?
That.
I should pretend that I watched all of Raw and SmackDown. I did not have time to. Was it really bad?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Why are they doing Lacey versus Charlotte? Like, I don't understand this because it seemed like Lacey and Charlotte as an alliance kind of worked character-wise, right? Because they were both against Becky Lynch, and Becky Lynch had to, like, be Becky Balboa and fight underneath to against the two blonde, like, Charlotte and Golden Age Charlotte. And now it's Charlotte versus Lacey, who are both heels, and you don't like either of them, so why?
I mean, I guess the idea is that going into Stomping Ground, the next show, it's supposed to be a three-way. So I guess you're building dissension between Lacey and Charlotte as well, but...
It's a three-way with Becky and Charlotte and Lacey?
I think so.
Okay.
Sure, why not?
I mean, like, I know that it's Alexa versus Bayley because Alexa beat Charlotte and Carmella on SmackDown. I did see that clip. And Alexa's on Raw, right? Like, commentary was very clear about she's a Raw superstar. Rule. Why is she challenging for the SmackDown championship?
It's the wild card, Sandra.
Burn it with fire is how I feel about that. Get Randy Orton. He's an arsonist. Have him burn the wild card rule with fire.
I did love, so Randy Orton, Triple H did that promo about the Super Showdown match, and Randy Orton just says, you know, why don't you go and get your balls from Stephanie's purse before you come to Jeddah? And, like, Randy Orton being a dick is just something I live for.
I mean, that's just a lazy line. Like, he's used that line before, I'm sure. Or someone has.
Oh, you know, but I love when Randy Orton is just an absolute cunt. It's one of my favorite things. But he very rarely looks, you know, interested enough to be there. But at least we got that this time. And then Triple H's comeback is, at least I have some balls. That's
good work,
that's
Triple H. You're amazing. At least you're not focusing on shoving things in people's asses this week. Thumbs up.
A fight over who has balls.
I just, you know that that's my least favorite thing in promos. Like, it's so frustrating.
I mean, so to kind of couple Raw and SmackDown in together. So Undertaker comes out and does a promo at the end of Raw. Which, I mean, when I sort of go off the air on Raw, I thought it was pretty good when it was Undertaker saying, you know, Goldberg, you're next. But then they put a thing on WWE.com, said that wasn't the end of his interview. He cut off. And he literally just says, on Friday at Super Showdown, you will rest in peace, and then leaves. And I'm like, it was better without that.
Yeah, no, I kind of would like Undertaker to just say, like, Goldberg's catchphrase, and then Goldberg can be like, hey, rest in peace, Undertaker, or whatever. Like, I don't actually care about any of this because this match is not for me, and that's fine. Like, I'm not saying that it shouldn't exist. I am happy for people who are looking forward to it. It's just, this is so specifically not tailored for me. It's in Saudi Arabia. I'm not going to be watching it. It's, you know, I liked Goldberg's comeback when he was fighting Brock Lesnar and stuff, but Goldberg versus Undertaker is just not something I'm interested in. But, like, I did watch the confrontation on SmackDown and it was fine. Like, you know, cool to see the two of them face off in the ring, I guess. It kind of pays off that Royal Rumble moment.
Here's why wrestlers should be allowed to come out and do unscripted promos. Goldberg warned The Undertaker that he should have a jock strap on Friday.
He did.
I mean, is there a bigger gift in wrestling than that line?
It's
you better you better have a jock strap, Taker, because you're going to want to be strapped in for what I'm going to do to you.
Like, is he saying that he's going to kick him in the dick? Like, is he going to do a behind the referee's back, like, ball shot? Is he telegraphing his strategy here?
Is he just being the most
Goldberg
human
ever?
Yeah. Poor Bill. We love...
Love him to death.
I thought Goldberg came across as more authentic than anyone on either show this week.
He came across like a dad who's coming back to wrestling.
But he managed in that couple of minutes to make you feel like he was going to fight The Undertaker. That was what he was going to do. And while Goldberg is not a great promo and it's not what people remember him for, it was interesting to me that he came back and just seemed more authentic than anything else in the show.
Oh, because it felt like him, because everything is so over, like, micromanaged and produced a lot of the time. Like, I watched, of the very few clips that I saw, for some reason I watched A Moment of Bliss with Alexa Bliss and Bayley, and then, you know, Charlotte and Carmella interrupting. And my goodness, was that terrible. And I like all of those wrestlers, but Alexa Bliss just saying that she needed her coffee, and like, it didn't play as funny. It wasn't interesting. And I don't understand why she was a babyface on Raw with Nikki Cross and then was a heel on SmackDown all of a sudden against Bayley. And I don't understand why a Raw superstar is being put into a SmackDown women's title match. And I don't understand any of this. And it all just feels really flat and annoying. And I don't like to be down on stuff, which is why, you know, I was more interested in talking about non-WWE stuff this week, because WWE just feels like a bummer.
Do you think Stomping Grounds is going to get us out of that?
I mean, no. I feel like it's going to stomp the soul right out of me, is what I feel. And I hate that. Like, I want to be invested in it. Like, I love wrestling so much. I just don't love WWE right now. And it's hard because I know we have to cover it, and that's fine. Like, I don't mind. Like, I'll watch it, but I mean, I'm not going to watch the Saudi Arabia show. I'll watch Stomping Ground. But it's just, it feels like a chore, and it feels repetitive, and it feels like there's no soul. It feels like Dementors have sucked the life out of Raw and SmackDown right now, and it's not allowed to, like, grow and live and breathe and be a wrestling show. Like, I've seen so many other wrestling shows in the past couple weeks that are so much more interesting to me, and I wish we could talk about those, but I know that, like, that's not where the interest lies. So it's hard because as a fan of wrestling, like, I know that there's so much out there. Like, wrestling's the best it's ever been, at least in my, you know, relatively short fandom. It's just WWE feels so formulaic and plodding right now. And it's not even that the wrestling itself is bad. Like, Antonio Cesaro versus Ricochet are great matches, but they don't matter at all, you know?
They don't. And I think for me, what's the most troubling part of right now is that you can't look to the future anymore of like, well, when these guys come up, it'll be okay. Because when people are coming up right now, nothing really happens. So
no, nothing at all. Even when they're the most exciting performers that NXT or the indies or whatever have to offer, it feels like the system weighs everyone down. Like, and I hate to be that person that's like, you know, oh, it's like corporate oppression or whatever. But like, that's just kind of how it feels. And it's unfortunate. Like, I want something to change, for sure. Like, I want the people who work there to be creatively satisfied, and I want them to have conversations with people backstage where they can actually be themselves and, like, maybe make wrestling grow and change. And maybe it'll be different when, you know, AEW debuts in the fall and when SmackDown moves to Fox, and who knows? Like, there's a lot of stuff on the horizon. I don't know if they're just in holding pattern right now, but the holding pattern is not exciting, and kind of sucks to have to like watch it and talk about it, because it just feels like a depressing exercise when I like, there's so much wrestling I love out there.
I mean, the thing that's kind of fascinating is that I've noticed that nobody, I've not seen anybody online on Facebook or Twitter or anybody I speak to even suggesting one match for SummerSlam, and we're in June.
Like, yeah, and like, even I, who, you know, like, I do not like to look to the future, and I do not like to fantasy book SummerSlam. Like, we are in June. It's to the point where people should be talking about SummerSlam. They're not. I feel like people are talking about Fyter Fest. I feel like people are talking about All Out a whole bunch. I'm more interested in those personally. Like, I'm looking forward to watching Beyond tonight. Like, that's happening right now as we're talking. Like, there are a lot of interesting matches that I'm super excited to see. And it's just WWE doesn't offer that right now, and it sucks because they're the biggest and they control everything. But maybe if they stop controlling everything, and maybe if they have some competition, then it'll be better. But I don't even know if I have hope for that.
I mean, you're not sending people away with a very positive message here, Sandra.
I'm not trying to be a big bummer, but I also can't lie, you know? Like, I really love wrestling, and I love a lot of the performers that are in WWE. Like, I'm still happy that Bayley is the champion. I really am. Like, Bayley versus Alexa Bliss is probably not going to be terrible as long as there aren't kendo sticks involved and Alexa doesn't just, like, win for no reason. There are things in WWE that are kind of fun. Like, let's talk about R-Truth. R-Truth is super fun. I love the 24/7 title.
When he came out, when he was under the table, it was superb.
It was so good when Cesaro went and got a table, and like, R-Truth was just on it. Like, I knew that he was, like, when I watched the clip, I had it, you know, I watched it because someone was like, hey, it's Zoro did this, Gnarltooth was da-da-da. But it was awesome. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I think injects life into Raw and SmackDown right now. Honestly, the only things that, like, make me want to tune in, like, I want to see what happens with Bray Wyatt and the Firefly Funhouse, which we just discussed. And I want to see what happens with R-Truth and the 24/7 title, because that feels different and it feels new and it feels vibrant and it feels like it has life. And it feels like a lot of it happening across social media is problematic in a way because it's not part of the television broadcast. But I think it's a smart use of social media because the performers are allowed to do their kind of their own thing. Like, you know, Matt Hardy getting to do some Woken stuff a couple weeks ago when he was trying to go after R-Truth or whatever. Like, that's the kind of stuff I want to see in WWE. That's more exciting to me than just like another promo segment or another Drew McIntyre versus Roman Reigns confrontation that makes me want to blow my brains out, because why? Like, I thought we were away from that when Roman Reigns got drafted to SmackDown, but nope, the wild card rule wants to ruin my life.
Every time someone comes out on Raw, like this week when it was like Roman Reigns came out and Charlotte came out, and they're like big names, right? So it should be this kind of like exciting moment, but it just wasn't.
And, but it doesn't feel that way because it just feels like, ugh, okay.
I think the biggest thing for me was that, like, you spent 3 hours of your TV show hyping that Brock Lesnar was going to cash in after the last 2 weeks have led to it. And then to not do it is just, it's almost like you're inviting people to just give up.
Well, it's basically telling people, don't be invested in what we promise you and don't be invested in our product. And that's the big bummer, right? Because there are so many performers there that are so super fucking talented and are so awesome. And I love watching them wrestle. I really, really do. But it's just overall, in terms of storytelling and in terms of the mechanisms behind what they're doing, it's just, it doesn't feel like anything matters and it doesn't feel like you can trust them. And that's the hard thing to swallow, is like, you know, how do we keep just talking about this every week? How do we keep having this conversation until things get better? Like, should we just talk about other promotions? Should we just like watch other stuff? Should we not be as WWE centric? But like, people want to hear us talk about WWE. So I don't know.
Are you asking me on air what we should do?
Basically.
I mean, I'm currently drinking a pineapple and raspberry cider that I don't want to drink.
I mean, I'm drinking a Lagunitas Waldo that is fantastic and also full of alcohol.
Not helpful in any way.
No. It's real good, though. You wouldn't good. Like it, though, because it's really hoppy and bitter.
Oh, God, no.
I know. It's not up your alley. But no, I mean, like, I think just in terms of, like, what do people want to hear us do about this? Like, do you want to hear us talk about Raw and SmackDown in detail? Because I'll do it. Like, that's fine.
I don't think, I mean, right now, it doesn't feel like the show's needed in detail review right now. You know, it's like we're building towards Super Showdown. So, you know, it's not like people want to really hear us dissect the Dolph Ziggler interview segments.
Ugh, yeah. I just can't with Dolph Ziggler. Like, honestly, I was scrolling through YouTube clips to try and, you know, familiarize myself with what happened in WWE, like, about 20 minutes before we recorded this. And there was nothing even in the YouTube clips that made me want to click play, other than, like, Bray Wyatt and R-Truth. And that was it. And for me, who, like, wants to give everything a chance and wants to enjoy everything, like, that's not a good sign. So I just... Yeah, like, I don't think people want to hear us just be down on the product all the time. Like, there's so much wrestling I enjoy. Like, I am happy to share what's going on in other places. And, you know, I enjoyed our conversation about Jim Cornette and Double or Nothing, but it's just WWE right now kind of sucks the life out of everything.
Well, I guess at the moment, there's just not much to say. You know,
because it all just feels like a holding pattern, right?
We don't know where anything's going. Except, you know, if SummerSlam is building towards, you know, matches A, B, and C that we knew were happening, then we could kind of try and, you know, almost connect the dots. But because we don't know anything, it's just kind of this weird pattern. And all he had said to me the other day, he said, you're struggling and you're the most optimistic WWE guy that I know.
I was saying that to a couple of my friends the other day. I said, you know, it's bad when Kenny's not even that interested. And like, I know for me, like, I'm not the best barometer because like, I'm not going to watch the Saudi Arabia show. So all the stuff that's building toward that, it's hard for me to pay a ton of attention to. Like Dolph Ziggler versus Kofi Kingston, I just get flashbacks to 2011. And also Dolph is just so whiny and I don't like him and I want him to be thrown into the sun. So no, I'm not interested in Kofi Kingston versus Dolph Ziggler. And I would very much like Kofi Kingston to win, please. But like, what even else is happening at Super Showdown? Like, there are no women involved. So the stuff I'm most interested in isn't on that show. And then Stomping Ground, what's even built for that? It's Bayley versus Alexa Bliss, right? And then you said that there's a potential triple threat with Charlotte and Becky and Lacey.
And I think they're going to do Seth Rollins and Baron Corbin.
Isn't that at Super Showdown, though?
Yeah, but, you know, it's so good they're going to do it twice.
Because I will say, when I watched Raw last week, I don't think I mentioned this on Inside the Ropes last week, but I did watch the Hulu cut of Raw last week, and when Baron Corbin became the number one contender to the Universal Championship for Seth Rollins, I just laughed. Like, I couldn't help myself. I just laughed maniacally, and Mr. Sandra was in the room and was like, Baron fucking Corbin? And I was like, yep. Guy who's in all the main events, guy who is completely uninteresting, guy who's, you know, doing whatever. Baron Corbin versus Seth Rollins. Why not? Like, that just seems so indicative of WWE being like, whatever, we don't give a fuck. It's just going to be Baron Corbin because that's who we have and that's our guy and whatever, like, deal with it. Baron Corbin is basically Roman Reigns if Roman Reigns had been heel but also less good at his job.
I mean, I don't know if there's a better note than that to go out on. But actually, I'll do a shag, marry, kill for you. What a fuck, marry, sure. Kill.
I was going to say, why are we saying shag? Come on.
Okay, so give me like a short list of something. Whether it's like a wrestling event, so I can only pick people in that event, or it's only a certain gender. Like, give me something to go on.
Think like 1996 Retro Raw performers.
Okay, so fuck, marry, kill.
So after September, because that's all I've seen.
Fuck, marry, kill. The Stalker, Barry Windham. Fake Razor Ramon. And Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Okay, well, obviously I'm going to kill Hunter Hearst Helmsley because I need to kill him. It's a kindness.
And you don't ever want NXT to come into your life.
You know, I'm just going to consider those two separate people, and whatever, it's fine. I'm very annoyed with Triple H on Retro Raw right now, so I think that killing him is okay. I would probably fuck fake Razor Ramon, because he looks like he'd be well up for it. I would marry the Stalker. We could go on adventures together in the woods.
As his theme tune has women screaming for their lives.
I mean, they're screaming. Are they screaming for their lives or are they screaming in adoration?
He is the Stalker. Add 2 + 2, Sandra.
I just love him. My favorite thing from Black Label was when Jake Parnell and Nate Webb were fighting, like, at one point, like, sometime before the basketball game broke out. They go back to the table where Barry Windham was sitting because he was at Black Label, and I'm so bummed that I missed this live, but I was watching it on Independent Wrestling TV. Like, they go by Barry Windham's table, and he just looks like, what the fuck am I doing here? Like, why is there Iron Maiden playing over this match? What is happening? I don't understand. And it was glorious, and I loved it.
So, with that in mind, that's pretty much it for the podcast this week. Finn and I will be back on Saturday on Patreon, Sunday in the main feed, with the PowerSlam podcast, where we will be covering Super Showdown, any news that comes out between now and then, and much, much more. Sandra, what are the plugs?
Okay, you can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW, find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985, follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for all the bonus content that Kenny just mentioned and more. There's tons going up all the time. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content. A new interview just went up with Dustin Rhodes from our show at StarCast, which was really cool, about talking about how WWE feels like prison, which seems relevant to this conversation today. And InsideTheRopes.co.uk is our website when more tours are announced.
So to play us out, just in case you're unclear and haven't listened to Retro Raw before, this is the theme tune to the babyface, The Stalker.
It's my favorite thing. I'm so happy to put Stalker references wherever they can go.
Bye.
Bye.